Hello and welcome to the Rapid Microbiology Podcast, and I'm your host, Paul Carton. Today's episode aims to help the research community tackle the reproducibility crisis that has not only wasted precious time and money in research labs, it also stifles progress to the point where researchers begin to doubt their vocation. It was the outcome of a survey in the journal Nature that realised there was a reproducibility crisis. Researchers were asked if they had ever failed to reproduce results when using methods and protocols from another researcher's paper. The survey showed that 75% had been unable to reproduce another's results, and just over 50% admitted to not being able to replicate their own work. This may be down to several reasons, such as the reluctance of the researcher to call the paper's author for clarification, but another reason suggested was that there may be a difficulty in replicating a specialised technique used in the experiment. And this will be the topic in today's episode. My guests today are from Sartorius, the suppliers of mechanical and electronic pipettes. First, let me introduce Sandra Soderholm, who is an application scientist in the Lab Essential Applications Development Team at Sartorius and has a PhD in biochemistry. Hi, Sandra. Welcome to our podcast series.
Hello, and thank you, Paul.
Hi, Sandra. And alongside her is Jennifer Labish, who is on the same team as Sandra and who is currently working on her PhD in lentiviral vector downstream processing. Hi, Jennifer. A big welcome to you also.
Hi, Paul.
Welcome, Jennifer. They are here to tell us that if we don't adjust how we operate these liquid handling instruments to the type and temperature of the liquid we are aspirating and dispensing, then we risk introducing errors into our research and increase the chances of failing to reproduce results. Now, thank you both for coming on today to discuss with pets, the unsung heroes in the lab. Sandra, can I start with you? Would I be correct in saying that most researchers prefer not to include the specific pipette method they employed in their research paper? Not to hide anything, but just because correct usage of a pipette will be assumed at that level.
Yes, that's correct. Pipetting is considered a very trivial task in the lab, and few think that the way they pipette has any impact on their results if they just set the pipette to the correct volume. So many are surprised when I tell them that this is not the case. There is so much more that you need to take into account when pipetting than just setting the correct volume.
And this is something you've witnessed yourself doing research. You've noticed pipette usage is not disclosed in research papers.
Yes, that's absolutely true. It's usually a matter that is neglected in research papers, and scientists, they don't take it seriously.
And you're here to tell us that incorrect usage of a pipette is one of the reasons researchers fail to reproduce results. Why are you so convinced of this?
Because you must use different pipetting techniques depending on the liquid type, the liquid temperature, and the volume you're pipetting. So if you don't apply the right pipetting technique, you will pipette too much or too little, affecting reproducibility and precision. For instance, cell-based assays include many pipetting steps, so you might end up with quite a cumulative error if the pipetting steps are not done correctly.
Okay, and in the context of, for example, COVID-19 research, which is something labs worldwide are performing when they're looking for COVID-19 therapeutics, such as antibodies and vaccines, they are dealing with cells, viruses, reagents, etc. Can you tell me what sort of damage incorrect pipette usage can do?
So pipetting too fast or carelessly might detach adherent cells from the bottom of your culture plates. Using the wrong pipetting technique can also cause air bubbles that can have a negative impact on your cells and might disturb also imaging analyses. So you should use a reverse pipetting technique when exchanging cell culture media. When seeding cells too high, pipetting speed increases the shear stress, which can have a negative impact on cell viability.
You mentioned the term reverse pipetting. Can you describe what that is exactly?
Yeah, okay. So what we know as normal or forward pipetting is that you press the pipette's plunger to the first stop, and then you aspirate liquid. Mm-hmm. And then when you dispense, so when you pipette out the liquid, you press all the way down to the sort of, say, the second stop of the plunger to get mm-hmm. the whole volume out. And as the name reverse pipetting indicates, in here you then do it the other way around. So you first press all the way down to the second stop on mm-hmm. the plunger, then you aspirate liquid. And so this time you will aspirate actually a little bit more than what the pipette display shows. And then you dispense by pressing the plunger to the first stop. So after this, there will be some liquid left in the tip, but you have pipetted the volume that is displayed on the pipette. And then the excess volume left in the tip can be either returned to the original vessel or just discarded. The positive sort of aspect of reverse pipetting is that it does not create any bubbles, and it's very suitable also for volatile liquids, for instance, such as ethanol.
This is recommended for exchanging cell culture media, particularly.
Yeah, particularly. Okay. Because, I mean, when you're exchanging the media, you want to avoid forming any kind of bubbles in there or foam and such things. So that's why reverse pipetting is really warmly recommended.
Okay, so you're only changing the media that the cells are growing in. And yeah. So this is okay. So let's talk about this new white paper Sartorius has released. The paper describes an experiment that aimed to measure the infectious titer of a lentiviral vector by infecting adherent human cells and quantifying infected cells by an immunological real-time imaging approach. In layman's terms, you're basically quantifying the infection rate. The white paper is based on a peer-reviewed publication and describes in more detail the pipetting workflow and pipetting techniques of the assay. Jennifer, can you tell me what you learned about pipetting when developing the infectious titer determination assay and what you concluded?
Yeah, so the published protocol requires a lot of pipetting steps. And during development of the assay, we realized that we must optimize our pipetting steps and define the pipetting conditions for each step of the protocol. For example, when working with adherent cells, like Sandra said, we observed that slow pipetting speeds are crucial to avoid cell detachment, and that certain pipetting modes are advantageous, like reverse pipetting, to avoid deformation of bubbles that would later hinder the image analysis. The use of electronic pipettes and the definition of exact pipetting steps, like the volume, the speed, and the pipetting mode, allowed us to perform an accurate determination of the infectious lentivirus titer with the possibility to reproduce data user independent. We learned that correct pipetting is elementary for analytical assays, and that the pipetting steps must be optimized for the assay and should be described in the paper so that the reader is able to reproduce the data.
Okay, so the electronic pipette was fundamental in performing this determination assay. What smart features have Sartorius added to pipettes to assist researchers in their work?
The Sartorius Picus electronic pipettes, they're ergonomic to use and very lightweight. They're actually the same size as manual pipettes, and they do not weigh more than a mechanical one. The Picus electronic pipettes can do things that a normal mechanical pipette cannot. They have multiple advanced modes, like multi-dispensing, meaning you aspirate liquid and then you dispense the volume in smaller fractions. And this is particularly useful in PCR applications or with many other experiments that are analyzed on multi-well plate. You can also set the speed of the liquid moving in and out into the pipette tip. This is particularly important when seeding cells or exchanging media for sensitive cells, such as neurons, but also when pipetting very viscous liquids, such as serum or glycerol. These liquids flow slower, and with too fast of a speed setting, you might not get all of the, for instance, glycerol-containing liquid out of the tip.
You can also add mixing steps, which can be carried out automatically without the need of pressing the pipette operating button multiple times. This frees your thumb from the repetitive work, and mixing is particularly crucial when preparing cereal dilutions. Otherwise, the actual dilution might not be accurate. And another fantastic feature is the play tracker. It allows the user to see which well they are to be pipetted next, in case they lose focus for something, when, for example, a colleague comes to ask a question. And with this play tracker, the pipette displays the next well to pipette to. Additionally, with the Pipus Next pipette, protocols can be programmed that allow for saving those pipetting steps that you repeat most often. You can, for example, save the sequence and settings for a particular dilution series you use very often.
The big problem I see here is for a lab manager in deciding who gets these Pipus Next pipettes. Because I remember working in a lab where one researcher kept his RNA pipette under lock and key. So would there be any discounts on bulk orders to prevent any arguments over who gets the best pipette in the house?
Well, the customer could definitely like contact us in order to find out. Mm-hmm. So that's a very good idea. I would recommend that.
Okay.
The researcher that you just described, he was absolutely right in what he was saying and doing, because pipettes, they should not be moved around. They should be stay put in their designated area. This is just because of the risk of cross-contamination. So definitely, if you're doing PCR applications, keep your pipettes in that lab. Okay. And don't move it between labs.
Okay. And this correct pipette usage, that's something you provide through Sartorius Pipette Academy. Can you tell me more about this?
Yeah. So Sartorius has a training concept that's called the Sartorius Pipetting Academy. And it consists of 9 different modules, with modules ranging from teaching the basics of pipetting to someone that is totally new to pipetting, to specialized modules like such as cell culture lab work, for instance. Mm-hmm. So anyone can attend, and I would recommend it even to professionals that have worked in the lab for a long time, because as a matter of fact, most experienced lab professionals, they have never attended a formal pipetting training. So attendees, including myself, with more than 15 years of experience in the wet lab, have said that they learned a lot from the Sartorius Pipetting Academy. And I realized that I did not know how to pipette properly before I attended these modules. So you can definitely contact us through our website or directly through a Sartorius representative and ask for your options.
Okay, thank you very much, Sandra and Jennifer, for coming on today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for educating us on correct pipetting techniques. From my own experiences working alongside researchers, I've noticed different pipetting techniques for the same type of liquid and assay. So I imagine there will be many that will benefit from what you've said here today and what is on offer at the Sartorius Pipetting Academy that will enable them to progress in their projects and careers. And thank you to the listener for making the time.